Welcome to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the only podcast that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. Today is another day where we're going to be talking about sleep and how important sleeping is for our overall health. And we're going to be speaking with one of the doctors that I had on for the special a couple of weeks ago on World Day of Orofacial Myofunctional Therapy Science, and her name is Dr. Denise DeWald, who is a primary care physician at a federally qualified health center down in Chicago. She is a dual board certified practitioner in pediatrics and internal medicine, and she completed her residency in internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Her foray into the airway development and oral motor function began with her daughter's severe drooling problem as a toddler, which led them both to being diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea. Recognizing the limitations of standard therapies for OSA, she embarked on a journey into other methods of managing sleep-disordered breathing, that including becoming trained in orofacial myofunctional therapy with Joy Moeller. Good morning, Dr. DeWald.
Good morning. Thank you, Shirley, for having me.
Oh, I'm so thrilled that you were able to carve out another little amount of time to talk about sleeping habits and sleep hygiene. We hear about sleep hygiene a lot, and I don't know that people can get all into it. There are some podcasters I've listened to talking about even going to such lengths as covering up illuminating clock in a hotel room and covering any little blue light that might be emanating from any piece of equipment. And it's like serious high level, oh my God, I got to get rid of the light kind of stuff. So do you have, in your experiences, have you come across a better, easier way to manage sleep hygiene?
Well, I have to say the best way of managing sleep problems is to fix your airway. not suffocating at night. So I was a lifelong insomniac. Even as a small child, I remember I had trouble sleeping. I would wake up. I wouldn't be able to fall asleep. I had sleep resistance. And, you know, I was a mouth breather. And, you know, as it turns out, I had sleep disordered breathing. I was finally diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea when I was like 46 years old. But it's interesting. Yeah, but it's interesting. I actually had a sleep study when I was going through a bad bout of depression, and I thought that it had to do with my sleep when I was in my early 30s. And that sleep study was negative, and they're just like, you know, no one can sleep as little as you're sleeping. It's a psychiatric. So they told me it was a psychiatric problem.
Well,
insomnia was psychiatric.
You had ovaries, so obviously it was a mental
It's hysteria, exactly. So part of the problem in my mind, and I'm not a sleep doctor. I may eventually do a sleep medicine fellowship. But I think part of the problem is that our definition of like an apnea or a hypopnea is a cessation of breathing that lasts 10 seconds during your sleep study. You know, they wire you up for a sleep study, and you know, they, hopefully you fall asleep. I needed Ambien to fall asleep because it's kind of a strange situation in the sleep lab. But you have to stop breathing for 10 seconds or have reduced breathing. Now, if your body senses that reduced breathing, like if you are someone who is a very light sleeper and wakes up earlier, that's not registered as sleep disordered breathing because you don't make that golden 10 seconds. You have to make that 10 seconds for them to register it as a problem. And honestly, I think that's what was going on with me all my life.
Yeah.
Because once I got an oral appliance and did my like tongue exercises and fixed that part of my body, I became a champ sleeper. Like, I can sleep really easily now. I can sleep 8 hours and not wake up once to go to the bathroom. I can fall asleep when I want to fall asleep. And this is a marked change for me from the rest of my life. And so the number one thing to get rid of your insomnia, I think, is to fix your airway. And, you know, if you think about it, like, insomnia is really, you can be fearful of going to sleep. If you're suffocating at night,
yep,
and not really recognizing it, you're going to be scared of it because you're trying to die. It's a dangerous activity for you.
Yeah.
And I've heard the story from other patients who've had sleep apnea. They used to be insomniacs. And once they, you know, got on CPAP and they tolerated CPAP, well, their insomnia went away. They slept like a baby. And so that's the number one thing. If you're a bad sleeper, there's probably something going on with your airway. And granted, I think airway problems are actually pretty universal in humans because we talk. We are really the only animals that will breathe routinely through our mouths because we talk, we have a blaring, and this is part of our functioning as human beings. For your listeners who aren't aware of Dr. Stephen Park, I urge you to look up his website, drstephenpark.com. Much of what I learned comes from him.
Yeah.
He's been a wizard in like really bringing these airway problems to light. And he has a book, Sleep Interrupted, which actually was what really made me realize that I had sleep disordered breathing after reading that book.
I want to just take one sidestep and talk one more second about the insomnia and the difficulty to fall asleep and this problem with the suffocation feeling that you're getting or people could mm-hmm. be getting. That was exactly our oldest son. He used to fight sleeping. I've never seen anybody fight so hard to stay awake. And, you know, now decades later, I'm like, oh my God, that's what the problem was. It wasn't the only symptom, but I can see now, you know, his uvula was so long that it used to dangle off and then like attach itself onto the tonsils. Not that the tonsils were big, but that his uvula was long enough to stick to a tonsil. And, you know, one day it was on this side, one day that was on that side. So that too is a sign of sleep disordered breathing and snoring because you're, you know,
oh my God,
you're overstimulating that little piece of tissue back there. So
gagging.
Yes. And my mother is having insomnia problems and her doctor prescribed a decongestant. What does she have? Benadryl to help her sleep. And I'm like, now I'm thinking, well, maybe that's curing some allergy problem and maybe she's having a better airway. So, you know, it all kind of stumbles around into the airway question.
Right. And actually some people will use the non-sedating antihistamines to treat their sleep disorder breathing. I've heard of doctors doing that. They use, you know, not Benadryl, but like the Zyrtec and the cetirizine, mm-hmm. which aren't sedating. So Benadryl has a little bit of sedation, but it has the anti-allergy.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, absolutely, I think that's part of it because the wider, just even a small amount of increase in your airway diameter will make a big difference in decreasing the resistance of the airway.
Crazy.
Because resistance goes as 1 over R to the 4th power. So small differences make big changes.
Well, yeah, when you think about the tube that's feeding your lungs, I mean, it's not very big to start with, and any little interruption there, any little size difference can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sorry. So that was the insomnia thing, and then now we're moving on to
getting better sleep. So,
yeah.
So you know, so on the airway, so my simplest intervention for patients, which takes like very little effort and very little money, is mouth taping. And I don't know anyone else, any other physicians who recommends those. But it's not a gag. It's a little tiny piece of tape. If you open, if you want to open your mouth, you can. But what it does, it stimulates you to just keep your mouth shut. And the reason why this works, I think, is, well, there's two ones. One, it enforces nasal breathing, which is more stable than open mouth breathing. And the other thing, when you close your mouth, actually, your airway at the back of your mouth is bigger when your mouth is closed when it's open. So when you let your mouth dangled open at night, you're actually narrowing your airway. And so you really need to keep, and you can, I mean, like the, there was a paper that was published in Taiwan, which they, this is a one paper on mouth taping. They called it a porous oral patch. But they showed x-rays and how the volume of the retroaural airway changes by just closing your mouth. And so this is a very powerful, cheap way of treating sleep disordered breathing, but without even seeing a doctor.
It is inexpensive, and I just mouth taping, there's some things I just can't do or won't do for no reason at all. I learned about mouth taping probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I was like, I just had big eye-rolling moments about it, and I took a class a couple of months ago with Patrick McGowan, and now I tape my mouth shut at night, and sometimes I still snore. But I'm like, oh, I made it all night with the mouth tape on. So I don't rip it off at night. How mm-hmm. were you able to do it right the first night? I mean, how did you get accustomed to it?
No, I had no problems with it.
Really?
Yeah, it was not an issue with me. So I, one of the lucky people, didn't bother me. I was like, oh, I sleep better. And the night that I've forgotten to put it on, I wake up at 4 a.m. and can't fall back asleep, and I'm going like, I forgot to put the mouth tape on. Darn it.
Interesting. So what kind of tape is it? It's not masking tape. It's not duct tape. It's a medical tape, right?
Yeah. So I use this micropore tape. It's just like a very thin paper tape. People can use like a little tiny strip, which is like maybe like, you know, 3 millimeters wide. That's what my older daughter uses. Or you can use like one that's more like a centimeter wide. That's kind of what I use. But it's just, you just stick it on your lip and it just keeps your lips shut. Well, it's funny. I talked to one of the sleep medicine doctors about it, and he said, you know what, that you might be stimulating the trigeminal nerve by putting tape on there, and that may be changing the whole way, you know, the musculature is functioning during sleep. I was like, well, that's an interesting thought as well. But for me, I know it makes a big difference. And I'm just, again, disclaimer, everything that I'm talking about is really anecdotal stuff, mm-hmm. other than what I've mentioned, because there isn't a lot of like very strict evidence-based medicine in this area of hints for getting sleep.
Can a person who's wearing a CPAP tape their mouth shut too, or is there they're opposing?
No, actually, that actually may be helpful for people to tolerate CPAP better. So CPAP, especially if it's just a nasal, mm-hmm. if it's a nasal mask. I mean, there are different types of CPAP masks. There's the nasal mask, there's like the nasal pillow. Then there's like full face mask where, you know, you can breathe with your mouth while wearing the CPAP. But actually, if you have a nasal mask and you open your mouth, you will suddenly be having air pushed through your mouth and it'll wake you up. So mm-hmm. actually a lot of people with CPAP struggle with that, and so they have these like crazy bands to try to keep your mouth shut. And like just having a little piece of tape may help with that problem.
Yeah, that roll of tape could, if you're really only using a half an inch wide piece, it could last you over a year.
Oh yeah.
You'd have to throw it out for being dirty.
Well, the tape, the micropore tape, it lasts like 2 or 3 nights, but a little bit goes a long way. Mm-hmm. Like I can get a big pack of it off of Amazon, and that will last me a year, at least 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
So for $13, that's about the cheapest intervention we can have for sleep disordered breathing.
Right, and it's not a pill, so there's no, you know, contraindications. Are there contraindications, would you think?
Well, I think if you get yourself completely snookered up that you can't take the tape off, that may be a problem. I would avoid using the tape if you get so impaired that you wouldn't be able to take it off. I wouldn't use it on very small children because you have to be able to control the mouth tape. You have to be able to take it off. And that would be terrifying to someone to have your mouth taped and you can't get it off. So that, you know, never, everyone needs to be completely on board. Don't do this against anyone's will.
Right.
And then the other thing is that you could get allergies to the tape.
Okay.
And then you can't use it anymore.
I had, I came back from Florida with kind of a snot problem. I called it, what did I call it? It was like, I don't know, it wasn't really a cold. I didn't feel sick, but I just had like snot for a week and I couldn't wear the tape during that time. Cause it was, there was no other way for air to go in at all. So yeah, so that would be, I guess, a contraindication, but it's not like a pill where it's affecting every cell in your body. Well, it kind of is, isn't it?
Well, it is affecting because we're getting oxygen to your body.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, if you have a cold, there's definitely a role for, like, decongestants so that you can open up your nostrils, because we really need to be able to breathe through our nose. If we're not breathing through our nose at night, we're going to have a crappy night's sleep. I mean, we really need to be able to breathe through our nose.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dr. Park talks about, you know, what happens to his patients when they do nasal packing, and they sleep so poorly. So he's actually stopped using nasal packing routinely because it's so miserable for the patients. Yeah.
Like when they do sinus surgery, you mean?
Exactly. Oh, okay. Exactly. It's just too miserable. It's just, you can't sleep properly with a plugged up nose. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then there's a role for like the short term decongestant spray that you don't use for more than 3 days because you can have rebound nasal congestion from it. Patrick McEwen has this really interesting solution for clogged up nose.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that where you hold your nostrils shut and move your hands, your head up and down?
Yep.
That actually works, and I'll explain how that works, is that you're just, when you squeeze your nostrils shut, you're pushing the edema. You're giving them it's like putting TED stockings on your nostrils.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movement up and down, you're massaging the edema out. So it's going into lymphatics and into the venous system and getting taken away from the nostrils. And so that's how that crazy thing works, but it really works. And then as you're then bringing dry air through your nostrils, that helps to maintain not nostril patency. So it's so important, especially the cold, to keep breathing through your nose. And so, like, I've noticed that when I read a bedtime story to my daughter and I don't pay attention, and I have a cold, if I don't pay attention to inhaling through my nose, my nose gets stuffed up again. But if I realize that I need to breathe through my nose, or just say, okay, story's over, I can't breathe through my nose anymore, I can actually breathe through my nose during a cold as long as I
really
keep the air flowing through it.
Well, yeah. let's spend one more second on this technique. So there's a couple of little fine points that need to be addressed. One is that you don't breathe in and then plug your nose, that you breathe out and then plug your nose, and you just hold it until you feel really uncomfortable, like you're starving for your air hunger, is what he calls it. And while your nose is closed, so you breathe out through your nose, close your nose, and then kind of jiggle your head back and forth. And that also manipulates the nitric oxide in the parasinuses, and that gets mixed in. And so by having you breathe out before you hold your breath, you're forced to breathe in to get the air at the end. And so that drives that nitric oxide then into your lungs and then through wherever it goes after that. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this is an important little feature. And for people that have kind of a little sinusy kind of a thing before they go to bed and before they want to put the tape on, if they do that 5 or 6 times in a 10-minute period, they'll be able to breathe through their nose easier once the tape is on.
Right.
And then another tip was to wear the tape for 20 minutes or so during the day to also kind of get used to wearing the tape. So that was it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I cut you off.
Anyway, I know that I would love I would love to see the research on the nitric oxide, but I don't know how much that's been done. But it's a great theoretical argument.
Works for me.
Yep, that's right. Anyway, back to the nostrils.
Yes.
The other thing is like breathe right strokes.
Yes.
They work for some people. They don't work for others. Dr. Park has this really nice little test to see if it works for you. So you like pull back on your nostrils to widen them. And if you breathe easier when you do it, then they're good for you. If you don't breathe easier, they're not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the breathe right strips works for me. I've had a lot of patients who say they help. The other thing to do is like exercise, because exercise, actually breathing through your nose while you're exercising, strengthens those nasal dilator muscles.
Ooh.
So exercise, yeah, so exercise has been shown to improve your night sleep and decrease sleep disordered breathing. So there's a real role for training your airway by breathing through your nose during strenuous exercise, which probably would be the same as a breathe right strip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, but too.
Just my conjecture on there, no evidence based on that. But there is evidence, though, that the exercise decreases sleep apnea. That's important. And that's important for getting a good night's sleep, is to try to get some exercise in every day.
And not certainly right before bed. You want to do it other time during the day.
You know, that's dogma. And
really?
That's dogma. And I don't know if there are studies that support that. Because, like, the times when I have trouble sleeping, if I don't exercise every day,
mm-hmm.
or every other day, I do have trouble sleeping, and I will, like, get on the exercise machine at 11 o'clock at night after I can't fall asleep, and I'll exercise vigorously for 20 minutes, and I'll go straight to bed and fall asleep. So
there you go.
So if you can't sleep, go exercise. Don't drink a glass of wine. Go exercise.
That's good to know, because that's what all of the TV doctors are saying, is to exercise, but not right before bed, because then you're going to stimulate, blah, blah, blah. And so it's nice to know that other people are finding help by doing some exercises right before bed, or instead of going to bed at first if it's not working for you.
Yeah. So exercise is really good. The other thing which people tend to neglect is that a lot of us are very sensitive to caffeine, like super sensitive. Like one cup of coffee in the morning may mess up their sleep, even in the morning, not afternoon, but in the morning. So if you have trouble sleeping, cut back on the caffeine. You may be more sensitive, and as people get older, they become more sensitive to caffeine. So someone who was able to drink a mug of coffee every morning when they were 25 may find that age 50 they can't do it.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit of a caffeine sissy, but I can still have coffee in the morning and be okay at night. So that's helpful.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I went down a different pathway. I thought you were going to tell me to turn the temperature down in my room and wear socks to sleep, but this is even better. To manage the airway is really, really important. One of the conversations that's happening on one of the dental groups that I'm on, they're talking about the difference between calling yourself a sleep dentist or a sleep practitioner, or using the word sleep as opposed to using the term airway. And I think even just this conversation today is a good illustration on how we're really talking about airway. We're not really talking about sleep.
Right. I think a lot of this is airway.
Mm-hmm.
There's more things that I could tell you about, but maybe that'll have to wait till another time.
We'll do that. Maybe we'll do that in the summer. Oh, thank you so much for taking some time out again today to talk with us about sleeping and the airway with respect to sleep, and not talking about blanking out little blue lights in your room, because that's tedious.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks so much. That was Dr. Denise DeWald, and she was talking with us about mouth taping and increasing the potential for air to get get through and how to sleep with tape on your mouth. That was pretty fun. Thank you for joining me today again on CrossLink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski asking you to share these episodes with whoever you like so that we can keep this conversation moving. And join me next time on CrossLink Radio for another topic. See you soon.